Hey there, Southeast City Church. Pete Van Valkenburg here with you for another week, looking at some of the realities of mental health, how that pertains to our real lives, how that impacts our faith. For those of you that don't know, I am in Northern Ontario on Manitoulin Island. I'm a mental health professional. I'm working with one of the crisis teams in the Indigenous communities up here. I've known Dave and Diana for a long time, good friends with them, happy to be able to connect with the church, even if it is remotely. I'm grateful for the technology that allows us to do this, even in the middle of a pandemic. I've been on the island, originally from Ottawa. I've been on the island for about 13 years, and I have a wife, April. We were married in 2009. And we have three children, Jack, Alana, and Eli, who are 7, 8, and 9. And we would all love to be there to hang out with you guys in real life at some point in person, not just virtually. So we're looking forward to that day very much. Today we're gonna be talking about grief and loss. With social media and with the realities of technology, we get a lot of information thrown at us left, right, and center about a variety of different things, but specifically mental health. It feels like in the last few years, we've seen an uptick of the information about mental health and coping and diagnosis and stuff that's come. And the truth is, not everything you read on the internet is helpful, which maybe isn't shocking to some of you, maybe it is. But last time I was with you guys, we talked about trauma and trauma as being the emotional response to distress, to hard times, to chaos, the emotional response to violence or stress can be traumatic, which impacts us long-term and short-term. Today we're gonna be talking about grief and loss. And to define grief and loss, grief is the emotional response to loss. So loss in and of itself means losing something in our lives. Immediately our minds tend to go towards the passing of a loved one, loss of a relationship, but it can be much more than that. It's really losing anything. It's really when there's a loss of something that we become used to, something that we loved, something that we enjoyed, whether that's a person, whether that's a companion, like a pet, whether that has to do with restrictions, loss of freedom, loss of mobility with an accident, any of those things are what we would put in the category of loss. Grief is the emotional reaction to loss. So when something is taken from us, we have a response, and that response is part of the grieving process. And grief is the way we would talk about the response to that loss in our lives. The thing I want to address is we're in a year of loss right now for everybody. All of us have been dealing with the restrictions and the ever-changing rules surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. And this last year, every single one of us have lost some of our freedoms. We've lost some of our ability to connect with people. We've lost social time. We've lost interaction. We've lost things that we really maybe wouldn't have put in the category of too important for us. But now that it's been a full year since we've had access to normal life, these losses have added up. For me, I'm a pretty physical, huggy, high-fivey, fist bump kind of guy. I was at a funeral in January, and the few restrictions that were maybe in place were difficult to deal with because we couldn't grieve, we couldn't mourn properly. And for me, that generally includes the physical hugging, the physical touch of other people, right? And that's been all lost for me. I think I'm starting to realize, the weight that carries. This year specifically for kids, you think of someone who's was 10 last year, is turning 12 now. Those are formative years where loss of normalcy, a loss of sense of community with their friends, those losses can carry heavy burdens into the future, right? That the grieving process is not something we normally consider to go with the loss of freedoms or with the restriction of freedoms, with the restrictions of social time. But at the same time, we are seeing a huge increase in a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms. We're seeing a big exponential uptick in alcoholism and drug use and domestic violence. All of these things can be unhealthy coping with loss, that normal rhythms and patterns would have us in a situation where maybe we wouldn't be reaching for the bottle quite as much, but we're seeing that as a society, the stress of the pandemic and the loss that comes with it, the loss of employment, the loss of housing for some people, and then the physical or the physical loss of people due to COVID or due to anything else. This has just been a very bizarre year for us, and I don't know that we necessarily go there automatically, but we're grieving, and that our emotional response to these losses has been what's really been a struggle for us to cope with. And I think because it's not something we expected or planned on, and because it's not something that has a fixed end date, initially it was 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and here we are in week 52, trying our best. I think that can really put a funny spin on how we're processing, again, the grief that comes along with the loss of our freedom, the loss of normal everyday life. All that to say, just to be aware, when we're talking about grief and loss, we're not only talking about death. We're not only talking about breakups or relationship splits. We're not only talking about things that we traditionally will think of when we think of grief. Because again, grieving can be something that comes with the loss of any sort of part of our lives. When we talk about loss, we can grieve for a lost thing. It sounds silly, but again, just like trauma, suffering is subjective. That if I have a watch that I was inherited and somehow it gets broken, smashed, or lost, there is a sense of grief that comes with that. There is a sadness. There is an emotional response that comes with the loss of that material object. Granted, that kind of grief is going to be hopefully a lot shorter lasting and a lot less impactful than the loss of a family member, the loss of a friend, a sudden death of a coworker. But it is still grief. When we talk about grief, we are again talking about the emotional response to loss. There will be an emotional response to loss. Oftentimes, a lot of these things that we're talking about, whether it's trauma, addictions, grief, loss, a lot of these things come together as a package deal. With trauma, typically we're talking about one or multiple events that have caused some sort of damage. With that damage often comes loss. We think of the loss of innocence. We think of the loss of trust. We think of the loss of potentially mobility or physical health. Those things are traumatizing that can lead us to grieving the loss of the way things were. These are very normal parts of life. Sometimes when things become a buzzword, like these have definitely become over the last number of years, we think that there's something special to them or there's something unique about them, when really these are an essential part of human experience since the beginning of time. That there's not a human being that has ever lived that hasn't experienced grief, sorrow, or trauma. And so when we have these conversations, as much as we might be talking about one thing or the other in one particular conversation, we need to be very aware of the fact that they're going to oftentimes be things that come together. Now, they're going to be things that come at the same time. They're going to be things that are often used as neighbors, that with trauma naturally comes loss, which means we're going to grieve the loss that the trauma caused us. And not to get too deep into the weeds on that, all that to say that it's important to learn about these words on their own, and really have a good understanding of how they impact our lives, but that it is very rare you're going to deal with trauma without dealing with grief. That the sudden loss of a loved one is going to be traumatizing which is going to lead to grief and forcing us to cope with the new normal, which is not a term I'm super, I'm not a big fan of the new normal. I feel like that maybe has been used in some weird ways lately, but that's the reality. Is grief is the emotional process of us processing a loss, trying to make sense of the way things will be from now on. So in the grieving process of losing a loved one, we are now trying to go from our lives that have them as a part of it to our lives as they are no longer a part of it. And that journey between their life and their passing is our processing of their involvement in our life. Grieving is natural. Loss is natural. These are not things we can avoid. And truthfully, to avoid grieving is often to be unhealthy in coping with our loss. Culturally, the West is not great with grief. Culturally, the West is actually one of the only parts of the world that grieves as quickly as we do. If you think of any time that you've been to a funeral or a wake or a visitation, whatever the term is, you kind of get your 1 hour to go and say goodbye or say hi to the family and give them hugs. And then there's a celebration of life or a funeral or a memorial service. And that's kind of the end of it. Culturally, the West has tried to expedite grief because it's inconvenient. Many other cultures, many other parts of the world. And then there are many cultures that have come to the West that continue to practice their traditional way of grieving, are a much more thoughtful and involved process. You think of the Old Testament where it was sackcloth and ashes when there was a passing and the community would come and grieve alongside of the people who were mourning. That until that process had let up, nothing else happened. In some cases it was a month, in some cases it was several months. In some cases it was a little quicker than that, but what we know for sure is that it was an entire fully involved process to try and deal with the loss. And I wonder sometimes if maybe the way that we've sanitized our grieving process might be part of the problem in why we don't cope as well as other times. I think there's a lot more to do with it than just that, but I do think that there's something significant about really confronting the loss. And the grieving process is essentially confronting it and being honest about the realities of the loss. That the grieving process starts with the shock of the realization of the loss and ends when we've come to grips with the fact that this is the way things will be from now on. So if we think of a soldier wounded in combat who is, waking up in a hospital room realizing he's lost his leg, that shock is the beginning of the grieving process. And that grieving process is not infinite, it is not forever, but it is a process that is going to take time to adjust to the realities of life without the limb. If we think of the passing of a loved one, the grieving process begins when we find out, when we have to face the reality of their loss, of their passing. Sometimes this happens before their actual death, which can make things really complicated, where someone is given a terminal diagnosis. Sometimes that grieving process starts immediately because people start to come to grips with, or the individual themselves have to come to grips with the fact that whatever plans they had or whatever time they thought they had has now been dramatically changed by a diagnosis. A healthy grieving process is one that takes you from point A to point B cleanly in a way that confronts the reality of the loss and takes us towards living life relatively normally in the reality of the new situation, set of circumstances. And that's all well and good to say, and that it looks good on paper. It's clean enough, I guess, if you just sort of pitch it that way. The truth is, with emotional responses come a very complex set of circumstances that impact how we deal with the things around us. For myself personally, anytime I've dealt with grief or loss or any kind of chaos that's brought on those emotional reactions, a lot of it depends on my state at the time, how my last week has been, how my last day has been, if I've slept, if I've eaten properly, what time of day these things are hitting me. All of these things can change how we respond to the initial shock of grief. The initial shock of grief, really the main thing, you don't want to put a lot of guardrails on that. People need to have their reaction. Sometimes if we try to stifle those reactions, you know, we sort of keep the lid on the pop bottle while we're shaking it up, and cause all kinds of problems down the road. So I think the main guardrails that I would say to put on that initial response is don't do anything dangerous. You know, if we're helping someone through that grief, or if we're, you know, walking through that initial stage of grief by ourselves, or for ourselves, you know, we really don't necessarily want to structure it too much. We want to allow ourselves to have a reaction, whether that's to cry, whether that's to be silent, whether that's to be alone, whether that's to be with people. Everyone's going to want to handle that differently. But the main thing we want to make sure of is that people are safe. This is where we would say to people, you know, don't run to drugs or alcohol. Don't run into unhealthy relationships and look for, you know, some sort of a release in an unhealthy environment or with unhealthy people. But other than that, we want to make sure that we're having our reaction, because that initial stage of grief is going to be pretty powerful, pretty intense. And it'll be, and I don't mean the word dramatic lightly, but I mean, it'll be a very dramatic moment potentially in our grieving process, that we're going to notice that this was the beginning of our grieving process. Where we get into the, we really want to watch patterns is in the days following the initial shock. That initial shock, that initial day may be a write-off. It may be a blur and a whirlwind and all the things we've heard described for individuals who are processing that kind of situation with their family, with themselves, with loved ones. Those initial hours are really things that there's very little we can do as far as the actual reaction and the response. But where we want to be really careful is in the hours and days following that initial phase, not to get into unhealthy rhythms and patterns. It's like anything else, that like a depression. It's not necessarily problematic to feel depressed for a period of time, but again, where it gets into problems is that if it continues on for an extended period of time. With grieving, we don't want to see it, that initial shock, last an extended period of time. The grief itself may never entirely go away. There may be days, years down the road, where a moment of sadness will pop up thinking about the way things used to be. That's normal, that's natural. Where it gets unhealthy is if at its highest level of intensity ends up lasting for a prolonged period of time. Meaning that someone being inconsolable when they find out the loss of a loved one, if that level of devastation lasts and cripples their life for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You know, when we get into an unhealthy length of time, again, not that the grief is going to go away, but that the way we handle that grief has to change. I think one of the most therapeutic things that I've ever experienced is being, I've experienced, I think, a couple times, being at a funeral and having been, you know, part of the family and having it been a family member pass away. And the moment, you know, after the funeral, or just before the funeral, after the visitation, I think, when the family's just kind of hanging around telling stories, and the laughter that takes place, right? That in that moment, we're still grieving and we're still very much paying tribute and honoring the life of the individual who is no longer with us. But in that moment, it's not the same level of shock and intensity as when we first found out that they were no longer with us, right? And when I say the intensity level has to start diminishing, if it doesn't, I mean, we're, as human beings, we're designed for short bursts of intensity when we need to. When we need to have these emotional reactions or these outlets, it's okay, it's healthy. But if we stay up at 100, you know, for too long, we're naturally gonna look for to unhealthy things to try and cope. This is where people will generally turn to substances to try and numb the grief. This is where people will generally turn to unhealthy living patterns, meaning that they may isolate themselves from everybody. They may not get out of bed for days at a time. They may not shower. They may not eat. They may kind of wallow and linger in that initial level of shock and grief. At that point, we can definitely say that's an unhealthy way to cope. This is kind of why if you're supporting someone through a grieving process, making sure they're eating, making sure they're putting on clean clothes, making sure some of the normal rhythms to life are still happening is one of the most important things you can do. We can't rush the grieving process. We can't make them, we don't want to try to be those people who are trying to rush people beyond the grieving process, because we can't do that. It's subjective. It's up to each individual to try and process. But what we can do is try and make sure that the material needs, the physical realities that have to be in place for us to be just healthy people are still in place, even in the middle of grief. People may not want to eat a four-course meal at the end of the first day after experiencing severe loss. That's okay. But tomorrow morning, we want to make darn sure that, hey, we know that they didn't eat yesterday. We know that they didn't change their clothes. They fell asleep in their jeans. So tomorrow, what we're going to do is we're going to let them sleep. We're going to wake them up. We're going to have coffee ready. We're going to have some breakfast. And we're going to encourage them to shower and change. That's not insensitive. That's encouraging them to be healthy, functional human beings, just to make sure that we don't get into a rut that becomes very alarming, because ruts are hard to get out of. That's why we need support people in our lives who can actually help keep us on the rails when we feel like going off the rails. And if we're honest, every single one of us has felt like going off the rails as a response to loss. And in those moments, we need to rely on the people that love us. We need to rely on the people around us to invest in us in that way, to make sure that we are not sinking too deeply by ourselves into this grief, which can cause a lot of longer lasting problems. I think one of the ways to look at grief, I said earlier that grief may never actually 100% go away, and that's true. For many of us, there are probably times where we think back in our lives and look back at a period of time in our lives where we hadn't experienced loss, or we hadn't experienced a specific loss, and we go back and we have those moments of kind of sadness at thinking back at how things used to be and recognizing where they are now. The best way I can put it, I think the most helpful way I've ever heard it put is, if you took a balloon and you put it in a cardboard box, well, initially that balloon would probably fill up most of that cardboard box. But what happens with balloons over time is they start to lose some of their air and they start to shrink. And depending on the size of the hole in the balloon, the shrinking happens at different speeds. Even if you don't poke a hole in the balloon, after a few days, it starts to be softer, it starts to be smaller, it starts to take up less space in the box. Ideally, after a period of time, that balloon will have lost all of its air and be laying deflated in the box. Still taking up space, but it's manageable. There's room for other things in that box when it's lost all of its air. Initially, grief is going to take up a lot of space. Initially, grief is going to be hard to ignore. Initially, grief is going to be something that feels like it's the only thing we can deal with, is confronting the loss and having to talk about the way things will be from now on. But in a healthy grieving process, day after day, doing the things we know we need to do, getting up in the morning, eating food, trying to function at the whatever level we can, eventually that balloon, that grief, is going to take up a little bit less space. And eventually that balloon is going to be something that we can manage to fit other things in our lives. Eventually it'll get to the point where it's really not going to take up much space at all. And we're going to be able to have a look at it every now and then, process it sometimes when the memories hit, but it's not going to be something that dominates. Again, that's a healthy grieving process. When it gets unhealthy is when it's not going away. Just like with sadness, just with like depression, just like with trauma, just like with almost everything in our lives, it's when it's at its excess that it's a real issue. So if the grief is something that will not go away, I don't think generally speaking, that's when we would get into unhealthy rhythms. People start to feel guilty when the balloon takes up a little bit less room. When there's been loss and, you know, it's been some time, maybe 2 weeks, maybe a month, maybe 6 months, and all of a sudden it's not something that is as fresh, and we start to enjoy life again. We start to not notice the grief as much. This can be a cause of a lot of guilt for people, which can then force them back into this self-punishment or self-inflicted punishment over their processing of grief. I think we need to be careful. We need to be kind to ourselves, and we need to, again, understand that grieving is subjective, that I'm going to grieve differently than you are, regardless of the situation. We can have gone through the exact same thing and process it very differently. Just like soldiers returning from war, what crippled one soldier mentally was something that another soldier wasn't even bothered by, and vice versa. We need to be kind to ourselves, that if the grief in our life is passing more quickly than it is for others, you know, we want to make sure that we're not trying to re-traumatize ourselves to grieve more or to grieve more intensely if we're just processing it differently. Now, the flip side of unhealthy grieving would be grieving that is more along the lines of the denial side. If something sad happens and I have no response to it, or I appear to have no response to it, that would be another red flag that there's some unhealthy coping or some unhealthy grieving going on. Again, in the West, we really bottle ourselves up when it comes to grieving and processing loss. And I think that if we are on one extreme, if grief is lasting way too long, that's an issue. And on the other side, if grief doesn't appear to have ever set in, that's also an issue, because that is weight we are going to carry, and it will come out at some point in one way, shape, or form, whether we like that or not. So being very aware of the fact that there is a process to grief, and in order for it to be healthy, it should follow the trajectory of larger to smaller eventually. And we may have puffs where it's larger and smaller, and it puffs up a bit on a birthday or on Christmas, and then it puffs down again. But that, generally speaking, we're going to see it decline over a period of time, that the intensity is going to decline. Now, just because the effects decline doesn't mean things will go back to the way that they were. Depending on the loss, depending on the event or the person that was involved, things will be different. That's part of life. That's part of how the human experience is, that we're constantly adapting to the new surroundings. We're very good at it. COVID has been a good example of the fact that, even though it stinks, and even though we are grieving and processing, we're able to do it. There will be losses in our lives that will impact us long term. There will be losses in our lives, whether it's breakups, whether it's loss of physical mobility, or whether it's loss of key people in our lives. These will leave a mark. These marks will change the way we interact with the world around us, and that's to be expected. There is no one in this world who escapes grief completely unchanged. We just want to make sure that we know ourselves well enough to notice when we're becoming bitter, when we're becoming jaded, when we're becoming fixated on sinful patterns, destructive patterns of behavior as a result of that loss. Sometimes we'll use loss as a justification for behavior that we know is unhealthy and sinful. Well, it's understandable that I'm drinking too much after what I've been through. Well, who wouldn't be a little bit rude after going through this type of thing? You know, we are always responsible for ourselves, even in the midst of grief. We want to be kind to ourselves and give ourselves permission to experience the grief initially with the shock and the initial beginnings of grieving. But at the same time, we also need to recognize that we are accountable for our actions. And that we don't let grief become something that embitters us to the point of being mean, jaded, bitter human beings. How we fight this? This is where we really need to recognize that we were designed to be in community. We were designed to be around people, that when we tip over, they hold us up. And when they tip over, we hold them up. This is why it was not good for man to be alone. This is why we need friends in our lives. This is why we need community. This is why we need a church community, because we need other people cheering for us. We need other people to support us, and we need to be able to count on other people when our lives feel like they're falling apart. This is how we're going to process grief in a healthy way. We need to make sure that we're putting checks and balances in place, that someone's checking on us. This is that we're not laying in bed 3 days in a row in the same clothes, and digging ourselves into a rut that's going to be much trickier to get out of. Biblically, this is a theme of Scripture. We have a book of the Bible called Lamentations. The Old Testament and the New Testament is full of examples of grief, full of examples of loss, and it's also full of examples of how God compassionately enters into our story in the midst of loss and carries us through it. One of the most powerful images of that, I think, is Psalm 56:8, where the psalmist writes that you see my sorrow, that you've bottled every one of my tears in a jar, and that they're written in your book. I think that is mind-blowing to me, that the God of this universe is so in tune with us that when we hurt, he is acutely aware of the hurt, that he has bottled our tears in a jar and they are written in his book, that we're able to come to God broken as we are to ask for help, to ask for hope, to ask for restoration, to ask for renewal, that the God of this universe is not some distant figure that is disconnected from our everyday experience, that he is so in tune with who we are and what's going on in our lives, that he is actually writing us, keeping track of the times we've been broken. Later in the Psalms, it says that he is near to the brokenhearted and he binds up their wounds, that we serve a God of comfort, that the God of the Bible is a God of compassion, and he is a God of grace, and he is a God of absolutely unbelievable love. He's a God of hope. It's important, I think, for me. I found a passage in the midst of some pretty difficult times that has been like salve on a wound. And I think if you've been a Christian for any length of time, I think you would probably have some of those passages as well. For me, it's 2 Corinthians 4:7-18. I'll just summarize it, but look it up. It's not directly related to grief, but it kind of is. It's the passage that says, "We're pressed but not crushed, we're persecuted, not abandoned, we're struck down but not destroyed." That we experience physical death in our bodies, that other people might experience eternal life. And then later at the end, Paul says that we consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing to the eternal weight of glory, that we fix our eyes on things that are unseen, because the things that are seen are temporary and the things that are unseen are eternal. That the God of the Bible is a God of hope. That grief is a painful reminder to us that this world is broken, that the things around us are not the way that they should be. And God is there to remind us of the fact that he is bigger than those circumstances. He's bigger than that brokenness, and that ultimately he will one day make things new the way that they ought to be, and make it so that there will be no more tears, no more pain. And I think sometimes we can get so bogged down with the weight of grief, with the weight of loss, with the weight of the pressures that this world has put on us, the things that we see, that we're constantly exposed to more horrific behavior and news stories that are just devastating. And it can get really depressing. It can get really hopeless to look at the state of this world. I think for the Christian, it's important for us to go to the one who actually has the ability to give us hope, the one who can give us hope that cannot be taken away, that even in the midst of loss, we're able to worship and thank God for the hope that he's given us. Sometimes it might seem difficult, and some days we don't feel like worshiping, but we can go to him in that brokenness because he's the one keeping track of our sorrows, and that he wants to give us some perspective and help us move through the process of grief in this broken world to the point that we will continue to be able to live our lives in a way that honors him, and also that we will be able to point others in his direction in the midst of our grief. If you haven't ever been a Christian, if this isn't anything that you've ever heard before, I would encourage you to ask the hard questions. You know, God gives value and meaning to our suffering. I don't believe any ounce of suffering that has ever been produced in my life, any amount of loss in my life, has been wasted. And I believe we are created with that purpose. And I believe that the Bible actually gives us those answers and points us in the direction that we are able to bring some meaning, that God is able to give some meaning to our lives, to our suffering, to our grieving. As much as we would like to avoid the grieving process, this side of eternity, it's not happening. On this world, there will be loss. In this world, there will be chaos. In this world, we will grieve. We will weep. We will mourn. But for the Christian, from a biblical perspective, understanding that God has more for us than grief, more for us than pain, and wants to bring meaning to that suffering that will make us more like his son and bring his name glory. If you have any questions about this stuff, I know that you can go to anybody connected to Southeast City Church at any time. They would love to talk with you. Again, I'm hopeful that someday I'll be able to come spend time with you in person. But until that day, I'm grateful for technology. Thank you for the opportunity to spend time with you this morning. I do hope that it was practical. I hope it was encouraging. And let's just close this time in prayer. Father, I just pray that you would be with us in the midst of grief, that you bring peace and hope and healing to those who are grieving right now, Father. For those that cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel, Father, I pray that you would just be with them, that you would bring peace that passes understanding. I pray that you would give us a good understanding of grief, God, that we could be compassionate and supportive friends to the people around us, and that the way that we experience grief and the way we engage the world around us would be something that makes you look beautiful and leads others to Christ. I thank you that you love us, and I pray that the rest of this day would be honoring to you. In Jesus' name, amen.